evening. Welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Lydia, and I'm an alcoholic. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary movement around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the steps discussed tonight. This evening, we're going to discuss step one. Please welcome our panel, Gary and Anna. Step one, we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. I will read the first paragraph on page 26, XXVI, and then the panel will share for a few minutes on each of the readings. The physician, who at our request gave us this letter, has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms what we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe, that the body of an alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight from reality or were outright mental defectives. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent with some of us. But we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. As laymen, our opinion as to its soundness may, of course, mean little. But as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. And now, turning over to our panel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Anna. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
My sobriety date is March 4th, 2013. I have a home group. It's the 49th Street Living Sober, meeting on Thursday nights at 5:30. When I was asked to speak, and one of the options was the doctor's opinion, I said yes. I get the doctor's opinion. That is something that has been relevant to me in my alcoholism long before I finally got sober. In reading it, I got a lot of comfort that there was not, it didn't answer the question why. I did what I did and couldn't stop drinking, but it gave me some comfort that someone has diagnosed this as an illness. While I wasn't ready to do the things I needed to do to stay sober, at least I knew while I was crazy, I wasn't that crazy, I was just sick. But what the alcoholic torture looked like for me was about 10 years of 4 treatment centers, 6 detoxes, 4 psych wards, and 10 days in jail. That was really, really a miserable time of my life. And after every one of those bottoms, in desperation, and just hating myself, hating what I'd done, I did it again, you know? And that, to me, there is no explanation for why someone would continue to put themselves, their family, everyone who encountered my life went on this roller coaster with me, and it was just so devastating and so sad and so frustrating. And, you know, what he describes is the alcoholic, the body being as sick as the mind. Like, my body, when I put alcohol into it, like, it takes over. I am an absolute slave to alcohol. I remember once hearing someone sharing a meeting, like, when I would be drinking, like, I couldn't leave a room without taking another sip of alcohol. It's like, oh, I might be gone for like 5 minutes. I better have another sip. Or, you know, I didn't know how long I'd be away from it, so I better have a little bit more, until there just was never, ever enough. And that went on for a very, very long time. I would have periods of sobriety and enjoy being sober, and then that moment would come that thought that, oh, I can have just one. Over and over, I tried the just one phenomenon, and it did not work for me because I am a real alcoholic. And also, sitting here, I realized that, you know, for many years I would come in and out of AA, and this was one of the meetings I would come to, and I would always sit in the back, never sit in the front. And this lady right here would always encourage me, no, you have to sit up front. But I didn't want to sit up front, because that way my ego was just way too big to sit up front. And then here I am sitting, not up front, but in front. And if you don't think that there's miracles, that is absolutely a miracle. And this lady sitting beside me is a wonderful thing. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Anna.
Thank you. Gary, alcoholic?
Gary.
I didn't go to a lot of jails. And, probably should have, but I never did. I was completely unaware that I had a problem. When I was 15 years old, I went out with a couple of friends of mine, and one of them was older. He had a car, bought some beer. We had a six-pack, and we went out there, and I had been this shy, quiet kid, and I know now that just means that I was scared to death and self-centered to the extreme. I thought I was so scared of what everybody thought of me, but when I had that first beer, I belonged. You know, this was it. I found my solution. I felt like everything was okay. And having had that first beer, I couldn't not only wait to get my second one, but I wanted their second ones. So, right away, without any knowledge of it, yeah, I had that allergy. When I put alcohol in me, I need to have more. Life went on for many years. I had one DUI maybe 15 years after that. That was a long time ago. Things were different. Nothing really happened. The last one that got me, my sobriety date is March 1st, 1999, and in August of that year, of the previous year in 98, I got a drunk driving, and they were a lot more strict on this one. And part of it was that they sentenced me to go to a meeting a week of AA for 9 months, which I thought was totally unfair, because I didn't have a problem with alcohol. I just drank. I didn't know any other way to live. I still was working. I didn't do much else. I worked and I drank. But looking back, while I don't know that I like to say full flight from reality or outright mental defective, but I was definitely maladjusted to life. did not see things as they really were. So, as an ex-problem drinker, the allergy makes sense now. When I first heard it, I didn't understand that. I didn't break out in hives. Nothing happened to me, really. But now I know that I don't react the same way as other people to alcohol. If I drink, I can't stop. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you. Page 28. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve.
For me, I didn't start drinking. Really, I drank like at the very end of my senior year because everyone else was, and I just felt left out because I didn't. I now know that, you know, pretty much throughout my life, I felt inferior and kind of that square peg in a round hole. But up until the end of my high school, I didn't really drink. I was curious about it, but there was something that kept me from doing it. And then when the first time I drank, I think I had like 6 beers and ended up falling into a cactus on the beach, and that wasn't a very good time. I ended up like in the popular girl's shower with her mom pulling like the cactus thorns out of me, and so that wasn't necessarily a highlight of the end of my senior year, which, you know, I did well in high school. I was voted most respected and friendliest and those things, you know, and so the way my life went after my 20s was not the way it was supposed to go. Like, that wasn't the person that I anticipated becoming when, you know, I graduated, despite the falling into a cactus ordeal. But I say that because what it says here is, you know, once the phenomenon of craving happens, those allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. Even with the bad experience that I had from my first drinking, I did like alcohol a lot. I liked what it did for me. I liked the way it made me feel. And whenever I drank, I remember it being to excess. It was never one of those just one or twoers. Like my sister, who does not like alcohol, never will understand that. She and I couldn't be more different when it comes to that. And had I married the man that she married, I don't think I would be sitting here, because for many years he worked for a beer distribution company and they had unlimited supplies of alcohol. And I was always like, why couldn't I have married him? But I know probably because I would be dead. So it's just interesting how you can be, you know, the same genetic genes and same house raised, and one turn out so differently in regards to alcohol and probably a lot of ways of dealing with life as well. But, you know, the longer I drank, the more alcohol became a necessity and less a luxury. My husband is in the Navy, and through one of our deployments, we were in Hawaii, and we didn't have kids yet, and I had a professional job, and there were happy hours and Mai Tais, and, you know, I think I was a very, very raging, budding alcoholic. I was still functioning, maintained my job, but, you know, and it was paradise, so I was kind of on vacation, had just the responsibility of myself, so I was able to do what I did without consequences. And the longer it went on, and the more I drank, the more the craving was something that I couldn't resist. And it trumped my responsibilities for my child when I had one, my job, my spouse, my parents, my anything. Alcohol came first. And it was a subtle shift. And I could justify it and rationalize it that, you know, oh, I'm a working mom. You know, I deserve this. You know, I work so hard. I take care of a house. When my husband was gone, you know, there was always a reason that I deserved it. And then when I started losing the jobs and wasn't taking care of the home, then it was all I had left. I could no longer keep a job. I think I lost like 5 jobs. Passing out under your desk is not something that gets you employee of the month. So I don't recommend it. But, you know, it didn't matter. You know, those just gave me reason to drink more. And it just continued and continued. And I have written here in my book, another lady, another woman named Anna, she said it here at Simple Actions that she was so tired of starting over. And I think I finally reached that point, that I was just so tired of starting over. I was just beaten and bankrupt and tired. And it just wasn't doing anything for me anymore. And that comes after like 8 years of trying and white chips and white chips and white chips. And you know, I used to hate the meeting on Sunday night that would ask people who were counting days, because that was an ego crusher. I'm at day one again, you know, and who's willing to admit that they're on day one, day seven? I mean, you're supposed to, and it's just so hard, but I was always counting days and having to try to admit that I was counting days. And so I'm grateful to be past the counting days. But I did reach that point that, you know, I had no self-confidence. Relying on things human was just not something that was working for me. And my problems, they were just so astonishingly difficult. And I would just drink them away. They didn't go anywhere. They just got bigger. But that was my solution, because I just couldn't face my life. You know, going from most respected to most abhorred in your family is not something that, you know, makes you prideful and makes you want to pick yourself up and, you know, try again. It makes you just want to drown your sorrows and give up, which is where I was a lot of the time.
So, the allergy again. I don't recall ever being able to drink and stop drinking. Problem wasn't so much that I kept drinking, but that I couldn't not drink. And once, you know, I found out that I felt better if I drank. And so that's how I arranged my life, so that I would drink. And it did happen that, no, I couldn't stop. I was an everyday blackout drinker for many, many years. And I didn't really notice it. There were couple times that I thought maybe I should slow down a bit. I thought maybe I won't drink this week, and then next weekend I can have a real good time. But I could never make it past Monday. and you know, I clung to the time, this one thought that, well, once I'd had an infection and they gave me antibiotics, I went 4 days without drinking. For years I clung to that, and then saying, yeah, I can stop. But then came the time when I had a toothache and they gave me antibiotics and it hurt like heck. And they told me the antibiotics wouldn't work if I drank. I still drank. But it didn't. I didn't learn anything from it. It went away. But I think I grew up in an alcoholic family. I'm pretty sure my father was an alcoholic. He never said anything about it. Small town we grew up in didn't have alcoholics. People drank a lot, but they didn't have alcoholics. But my sisters, they can have a beer, a drink, whatever. They don't care. When I used to go visit them, my sister would drink her Diet Coke. I'd drink a few beers with my brother-in-law. And I'd keep making trips to my bedroom where my suitcase was with the bottle of tequila, just to get me through the evening and then to finish off the evening. It didn't bother them. I just had to have it, and I couldn't stop until I blacked out and passed out. And you know, I went a long time. Life was okay, kept getting worse, never worse enough that I noticed. There weren't any big drops, but things did become more difficult. And I know when I got that second DUI, in jail, they asked me if I wanted to call somebody. I couldn't think of anybody. Nobody that would come get me. And they told me I needed a lawyer. I asked my bankruptcy lawyer for a referral. That's what my life is like. But I thought I was doing pretty darn well. But the allergy was there all along from day one. Never had enough. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to continue on page 28, XXVIII. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks, drinks which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful, with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there's very little hope of his recovery.
I liked the effect produced by alcohol a lot. You know, I was thinking the other day, I'm kind of grateful I don't really remember what that feels like. I know I liked it, and sometimes I wonder, like, what's the ah now? You know, like, what on Friday afternoon is the ah, you know? And sometimes I just, you know, wish there was something to absolutely replace that. But for me, my life was so hard when I was drinking. Figuring out how I was going to buy alcohol because, you know, from about 10 years ago, my husband, you know, got a separate checking account, so I wasn't spending our money online. And so I was always, and since I was always losing jobs, I had none of my own money. So it was always a challenge to try to figure out how I was going to, you know, maintain my stash. And, you know, that's when I was actually living in the home and not sent to Florida to my parents to take care of me because I was such a problem. What are they supposed to do with me? You know, it just was so hard. Here I was, you know, a 35-year-old woman, like, living with her parents, and they're like, what are we supposed to do with you? I'm like, I don't know. There was a period of 24-hour babysitting with my family. My sister either had me, my mom had me, had to go to work with my dad. I was an adult, or supposed to be an adult, and literally 24 hours of babysitting was what I required just to keep me alive and keep me from drinking myself to death. So that has been replaced with somewhat of peace and serenity of actually living in the same place for a year, which is an accomplishment for me. You know, while my husband and son have maintained residence in one place, I've kind of been here and there and everywhere because I couldn't be relied upon to be an adult and be a productive member of the family. So that's something that, you know, that's an ah. You know, I can lay my head down in the same bed every night, sober, and that's a gift. So I have a lot of experience succumbing to the desire again when the phenomenon of craving develops. I remember so many times, you know, getting that thought, okay, I've been sober for 30 days, you know, the wreckage is kind of cleared, let me just go get one bottle. I would go to the store, and if I had the money, get a bottle or whatever I could afford. I would not wait till I got home, buy the kind that you could either twist off, and, you know, I would even, like, anyway, I won't go into how I would sometimes have to open the bottles, but I wouldn't get home, and I would be in the car or wherever, just, like, get it open and get it started as fast as I could before I second-guessed myself, and I would think, this is not going to go well, but I don't care, I need this right now. And then the spree would, you know, go on as it does, you know, 7, 10, detox, you know, it never ended. And towards probably the last year, I couldn't stop drinking by myself. The phenomenon of craving from my body, my mind, every pore of my being, I could not stop from drinking once I started. I would want to, and I would lay in bed from like 3 o'clock until 6 o'clock the next that morning, like praying that I wouldn't drink. And like I would usually have a bottle of wine like sitting there that had just a little bit of leftover so that I could stop the shakes or whatever, but I would not drink it for that 3 hours. Okay, I'm not going to drink it, I'm not going to drink it. And then I would, and then I would get some more, and then it would just keep going, you know. But I would pray, I'm like, please don't let me do this. And because I hadn't, it was just this cycle, you know. Here's my son in the next room, like having to get up for school, and I want to be dead, and you know, it was such a nightmare, and I couldn't stop it. And I was just, I don't know why I was so unwilling to just do what was suggested. I think for me, I had to go through what I had to go through, and it was repeated over and over. And you know, I'm hoping that, you know, as the longer I stay sober, that this psychic change is happening, because I don't think about drinking that often. You know, I'll see it and I'm like, oh, if only, but it's not, and I can't drink, and I know that. And you know, this last time going into rehab, I felt so alone. I understand what it's like to get a DUI and be released from jail and have no one to call, because that was me. And so then I walked from jail, and I don't know if any of you know where the Virginia Beach jail is, but it's not somewhere you want to walk from at midnight. But that was, you know, that was where my life was. I had no one to call, and I just started walking, and I slept like in a lawn chair. And anyway, it's a long story, but that's what alcohol does to me, and that's what it had done to my life. I had no one. No one wanted to hear from me. That was pretty bad.
Thank you. Well, when I finally had to come to AA, and after on my fourth weekly meeting that I was forced to come with to get that darn court card signed, I'd heard enough. I'd actually listened to what the people in the rooms were saying, and the people, some of the old guys, were talking about what their life had been like before they came to AA, and I recognized that because that's what mine was like. I was still drinking. I was just very resentful that I had to wait that extra hour on one day a week to go home and drink. But I recognized what they were talking about, how their life had been, and they talked about what happened, and then they talked about what their life was like now. And that sounded pretty good to me. I wanted that. And I wanted to come back. And I somehow knew that I had to not drink to do that, to be part of the club, to be accepted here. And it happened. Something happened. And I stopped drinking. And I felt much better. Life was better. I got along better at work. Things were better just by not drinking. I kept going to meetings. I kept going to more meetings. But it took me about a year, over a year, until I finally figured out I wasn't getting what those guys had, what they were talking about, what it was like now. I didn't have that yet. People were talking about the promises, and I was still getting the bedevilments. So I became willing to actually start reading the book. And it was even longer before I got to the Roman numerals. Because I never read the Roman numerals. So when we read the doctor's opinion, things changed. And this paragraph here is really what did it for me. When we got to this one, I drank because I liked the effect produced by alcohol. That's what I lived for before I stopped drinking. And I didn't know the truth from the false. I didn't know what was real. All I knew was my life. And my alcoholic life seemed the only normal because it's all I knew. I could not imagine not drinking. When I went to my alcohol classes for my DUI, I had to sign a paper, the goals of the program, and check out, initial all these paragraphs. And one of them was to abstain from drinking. And I thought that was funny. Why would anybody do that? Yeah, I'll initial that. And after like my second meeting, one of the guys was saying, well, are you still drinking? I looked at him like he was crazy. Of course I am. I saw no reason not to. But like I said, after a year and more, finally reading this next line got to me when they talked about that sense of ease and comfort that comes at once by taking a few drinks. That's what I needed. That's what those old guys had, that sense of ease and comfort. That's what I got from having that drink when I got off work, opened up that bottle of tequila. That's how I felt. I'm okay. I still need to feel that. Now I still need to feel okay. I still need that sense of ease and comfort. I can't do alcohol now. I don't want to go back to that. How do I get that sense of ease and comfort? Unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there's very little hope of his recovery. How do I do that? I got to do what those old guys did. I got to work the steps. I got to find a God that I can trust and rely on, one that will solve my problem for me, one that I can rely on to take care of me no matter what. And most often I have that sense of ease and comfort now. And when I don't, I know where to find it. Thank you.
I'm going to continue on page 6, page 29 in our Roman numerals. I do not hold with those who believe that alcoholism is entirely a problem of mental control. I have had many men who had, for example, worked a period of months on some problem or business deal which was to be settled on a certain date, favorably to them. They took a drink a day or so prior to the date, and then the phenomenon of craving at once became paramount to all other interests, so that the important appointment was not met. These men were not drinking to escape. They were drinking to overcome a craving beyond their mental control. There are many situations which arise out of the phenomenon of craving, which cause men to make the supreme sacrifice rather than continue the fight.
I have both of those last two sentences underlined many times. Because that is absolutely what happened to me. I was not drinking to escape at that point. I was drinking to overcome a craving beyond my mental control. It's indescribable. I was telling my husband about speaking tonight. I kind of read him some of the passages, and he was giving me his input on, you know, what the phenomenon of craving is. And I just couldn't even listen. I just kind of wished I hadn't even, like, read it to him, because I'm like, no. It's just kind of like, And then he took it the wrong way. Anyway. But I believe that while he watched it occur within me and his family, I don't think that someone that's not alcoholic could ever really understand what's that like, what that's like, why you would put that before everything. And, you know, in reading this, you know, I remember that job that I passed out under the desk after a month of employment at. I fought for that job. I interviewed like 3 times. I mean, I wanted that job. It was a really good job. And, you know, and it just makes perfect sense to me when I read this, that, you know, the day before business deal, you know, it doesn't make any sense, but I did that, you know. The day before I was to do anything that would be good in my life, I would drink before. And then I would be facing these people looking at me, why? I'm like, I don't know. And that was just the worst situation, because I couldn't explain my behavior. I couldn't defend myself. All I could do was just sit with it and know that I've disappointed people yet again, and over and over. And so, you know, when you say mental control and willpower, I mean, I feel I'm not the most disciplined person, but I can have mental control over myself when I need to. I mean, I had some homework I needed to do today, and I got that done, you know. So you know, I can make myself do things that are necessary to do, but I could not make myself not drink. And I like what Gary said. You know, I did have to commit myself to this program, to work the steps, to do what those people who had what I wanted did. And it just took me a long time to be willing to do that. And this last time in treatment, when I was just alone and had drank away a trip to Paris, who does that? I did. And so while I'm in treatment and my husband and son are in Paris, I'm getting to kind of, you know, really sit with myself and my behavior and my choices. And prior to that, my program of sobriety had been working two really crappy jobs. So if I work 50 hours a week, then I won't have time to drink. I didn't have time to drink then. I didn't also have time to work a program or go to meetings. But if I just, you know, work all the time, then I won't have time to drink. I won't have time to think. I'll just do. I was doing the wrong thing. And then one day, the thought of alcohol came into my mind. It had always been in my mind, but this time the craving was beyond my mental control. And so one bottle of wine, and then 6 days later of drinking, another trip to detox and treatment is about the way my life went. And then the trip to Paris went by the wayside. But, you know, I had everything in front of me and everything to lose by that one decision to pick up that bottle of wine. And so when I had done my 21 days in treatment, I didn't have anywhere to live. I didn't know where I was going to go after treatment. And so I was able to get into an Oxford house in Williamsburg, which was not my idea. That was not where I wanted to go, but that was my only option. I had looked at Oxford houses in Virginia Beach because I needed to be close to my family because they can't survive without me, even though they just did 21 days on a trip to Paris. But I'm really important and I need to be close to them. You know, for once I took a suggestion and they said, why don't you stay in Williamsburg? What's your aftercare plan if you go to Virginia Beach? Oh, I'll figure something out. No, we have an aftercare set up for you here in Williamsburg. I think you should stay. And so finally I said, okay. That sounds like a good idea. It's not my idea, and it's actually a better idea. So let me try that. Well, I didn't say it that way, but I'm like, okay. So I took that suggestion and for once put my sobriety and what I needed to do to stay sober versus what I really wanted to do, which is just get out of Williamsburg as fast as I can and get back to my life and back to drinking, which is essentially what would have happened if I had done my plan. But God put so many things in place for me that I couldn't have imagined. I mean, they were, at the time, huge. But to someone else, they probably wouldn't be as big. Like, I got a job working at a diner, and the gentleman who was the owner paid me in cash weekly, which is what I needed to pay my rent. How does that happen if it's not God? And a girl that was my roommate had been in the same treatment center that I was in. And she was, you know, trying to do the same thing I was, which is get her life back together. So these are things that I don't take for granted. And they've helped come together in a way that has strengthened my faith in God and also given me a pretty solid feeling that it wouldn't happen again. So this sobriety is a period of grace. And I don't want to mess it up. And so I know that I have to work really hard to stay sober because I have a long history of relapse, and I know that. And so it's something that I don't take for granted, and, you know, I don't do this great or perfectly or any of that. But I know what I've been through, and I know what I was given. And as I started, like, I used to sit in the back and, you know, want to be sober and be a part of this group so bad, and I just couldn't until I had just had enough. So, anyway, that's all.
Well, I never really had much mental control. you know, 'cause because once, you know, I had no way of keeping from drinking. I didn't know any other way to live. I drank, and when I drank, I continued drinking until I was done. I know there were some times, you know, towards the end when I would think that I should slow down, you know, I've got to do something, figure out ways to keep me from drinking, but nothing seemed to work. Most things weren't that important that they really had to interfere with my drinking. Talked about missing a trip to Paris. I remember my company sent me to Italy once to work with our suppliers in the factories to see what was going on. I bought a bottle of gin duty free to take with me for the week. That lasted the first night. The mini bar went the second night. And then I had to find a liquor store in a small Italian town. I did. But I had no control either in not drinking or in controlling my drinking. And I never had any thought about doing it, really. It was all I knew. Once I drank, my craving kicked in. That was it. And I'd do it again the next day. Thank you.
Thank you. Our final reading is on page 30, XXX. All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. That's our final reading.
I think I've pretty much shared with you that I cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. It's just so hard to describe how that just takes over. It's just crazy. And I think I'm allergic to shellfish. I mean, it doesn't take much for me to stay away from shrimp. And, you know, for me, when I would have an allergic reaction to shrimp, I could take Benadryl, I didn't like it, but, you know, and that reaction was minimal compared to what would happen to me when I drank. But I only ate shrimp once, you know? Well, actually, it was lobster, same family. But, you know, so it's kind of, when I hear the word allergy, it kind of makes me giggle, but, you know, because I hear some people are allergic to strawberries, but, you know, I like the allergy comparison, but for me, that just needs to be a stronger word than allergy, because, like I said, I'm allergic to shrimp, and it didn't take me much to stay away from it. But there is absolutely something that happens to us, or to me, when I drink alcohol, that absolutely sets me apart from other. And, you know, I always have, from the very start, like the effect produced by lots and lots of alcohol. You know, once I started feeling good, I just wanted more, you know, and it just it was never enough. And I would buy, one time, you know, my mom trying to help, I would always buy the, I think they're called Magnum bottles of wine. My mom, trying to be helpful, she suggests I just buy the smaller bottle. Why don't you just buy the smaller bottle? I'm like, well, then, Mom, I would have to get in the car and go to the store and get more. It just doesn't, you know, and just such an innocent suggestion. But for me, it's like, I don't even remember what I said. I was like, thanks, Mom. But, you know, and... when I was reading about the treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated, one of the things that I didn't mention before was a sponsor. And in reading the word treatment and thinking of the relationship and the person that God put in my life to walk me through this sobriety, there's a treatment to that. You know, while it's hard to describe when you find a sponsor that you know is just the right fit, and it makes all the difference. And that's been just probably the most important part. You know, and the entire abstinence thing, you know, I wouldn't want just, like, a little abstinence. You know, I'm like, what's one glass of wine gonna do? And, like, even if I think I was talking to someone, even if I could drink wine and not get the effects, like, I don't really like the taste anymore. So that's not necessarily a solution either. You know, so there's just so much in this book that when I read it, it just solidifies, you know, in my heart of hearts, even though I hate that phrase, that I'm an alcoholic. That I think I have been since forever, and it just took a certain amount of alcohol to flip the switch to where it was no longer something that I could choose, but something that I was a slave to. And then it just took a really long time for me to get to that point where I was ready to take my life back. I think some people have to go through a lot, and some people, you know, don't. And everybody's path is their own, and, you know, and then they just have that to share with the person that goes through the same things that they do and say, I've been there, which is the, you know, the best words that you can hear from somebody. And I think that's what this program's all about, because there are some times when I know I felt like the loneliest person on the planet, and it was just really hard. But, you know, for anyone that's new, I think the best thing that you can do is just not give up, because for not everyone does their time come, but for many it does, and it's not impossible, even though sometimes it seems like it, because it seemed like it for me. And the one day at a time, I hated that, but it's all you can do, all I could do, sometimes a minute at a time. But there is hope, and there's hope in these rooms. If I can go from the back to the front, than anyone can, seriously, because I was a hopeless case. And I learned that from someone, she's like, yeah, we didn't think you were going to make it. I'm like, really? You knew it was that bad? I put on a pretty good front, but apparently I didn't. So I was a pretty hopeless case, and grateful to be sober today and able to share with you.
Thank you. The phenomenon of craving. It's, as I've said, I loved it. The problem was I couldn't not drink. When I got into these rooms and, you know, I saw, you know, listened to you guys talk, you talked about God, you had God in these steps up on the wall, and I just, you know, if I have to do God, I don't know if I can do this thing. But when I got to the point where just not drinking and going to meetings, relying on the fellowship, that wasn't enough. You know, eventually, I'd have probably had to do something to get rid of, you know, to make things feel good again. And only when I became desperate enough, even though I was sober, desperate enough to do something, to become willing to believe that there was a God that could give me that sense of ease and comfort that could make me feel right. It's the only way abstinence makes any sense to me, is if I got something, that sense of ease and comfort that I need to feel right. God does that. I used to, the old timers, I remember he kept telling this one old guy, he kept talking about God all the time, you gotta stop doing that, it's gonna chase away the new people. Well, if it does, alcohol will chase them back. And those people that talked about God, I got to be real good friends with them. Abstinence is fine. I have no thoughts of, well, once in a while. But it's been a long time since I had actually a real thought about drinking. And I don't know why I would want to drink now. Nothing I could drink would make me feel as good as I do now. Thank you.
Thank you. I thank our panel. Group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any AA-related announcements?
My name is Dono, alcoholic.
Hey, Dono.
In Suffolk tonight at 6:30, the group called Friends of Bill W. They're having their sponsorship meeting, and it's an eating meeting. It starts at 6:30. It's out on 360 in Suffolk tonight.
Oh, that's right, it's already on.
Anyway.
Take 45 minutes.
Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd like to welcome you.
I'm Kevin.
Hey, Kevin. Hey, welcome. Kevin. Glad you're here.
Hey,
Kim.
Hey,
glad you're here. Hey, Melissa. Welcome. Glad you're here.
Glad you're here. Well, thank you. Literature is available on the table right there. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting if you're interested. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, would you please raise your hand? Thank you. And if you have any questions or want additional information about sponsorship, please come up and talk to me after the meeting. Reminders. Smoking. Please use the butt cam provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting and audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. And in closing, can we thank Gary and Anna for... Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at a little Mexican restaurant up the street called Plaza del Sol. And I'm looking for a volunteer to read the last two. David has volunteered to read the last two paragraphs on page 164.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answer will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Amen.
Thank you. I'd like to close with the meeting with the Lord's Prayer. Anna, you want to take us out?
Oh, sure. Who brought us together tonight?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day